Now entering Nerdist.com.
Oh, I like it. It's fun. Oh my God.
Very funny comedian, Mr. Todd Glass is here.
Oh my God, that's my aunt. I need my credits. Listen up, people. Come closer to your headphones.
Comedy Central presents Todd Glass.
That's exciting. I get excited, and it's my show.
From the beautiful Las Cienega Strip, high atop Black Horse Motors, it's the Todd Glass Show.
Oh, my God. This is like a real show. I'm not fucking around. You got the fucking shit I fucking put out. It's fucking right.
I don't know. Well,
it's my new style. Shut the fuck up. Graham Elwood was here. This is the way we talk to each other. Hello, everybody. Hold on. First of all, stop. That's right. I'm back to that again. Just appreciate life. I did that hot washcloth thing the other night, even though I tell everyone to do it once in a while. If you haven't listened to me before, if you're a new listener, I say, even if you're just having a sandwich, sitting down having a sandwich, get a hot washcloth like at the Chinese restaurants, stop, put it on your face, and enjoy it.
Unless you're driving. Don't do that.
You make my pants wanna get up and dance.
I granted, it wasn't
my zen, my zen moment that I was serious about. And you know I mean it. You know, Daniel, me better than anybody in the world, that I really want people. Some people, they hear
I know.
Get a washcloth, do it. You know I want people to do it and go, he was fucking right. Like, we thought, how much could it do? I did it the other night. It reminded myself. I was like, I was ready. Cook, sat down. Everyone started to eat. No, hey. Stop. Hot washcloth.
It feels good.
On your balls.
You make my pants wanna get up and dance.
All right, we got so much today. What do? Do you tease? Do you say like who's going to be here today?
Well, yeah. You want to announce?
I'm excited. Tom Wilson is here today, and Tom, I've known since I was just turning 16 years old in Philadelphia. He was the first comedian, one of the first. I saw three, and he was one of the first comedians I ever saw. And I don't
was
know
that
how,
on the first night you went to see comedy.
On the first night I went to see comedy in Philadelphia. And we'll talk about it more. I don't want to, you know, tell too much because I'm so excited to talk with him about it. And he was, he was so nice always. But I'm going to tell him. We'll talk about that when he's here. I thought about saying it before he gets here, but I want to tell him that ethic or whatever you call it. What is that called when you return people's calls? We'll talk about it later. I don't need to stop. Here I go. I'm all over. This is the part I listen to. And I go, I was like, stop. I'm going to get a hot washcloth. All right. So we're going to get through some stuff. And Daniel, you were away in Vegas. We'll get to that. Oh yeah. How do you like that? Gets you excited. I know if I tell you, you're going to get to talk, you get a big smile on your face.
Can I talk?
That's it? Is that enough? Come on. That's got to be fun. Your family.
Yeah, no, I said that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. If your family listens, they hear you right now. You're like,
oh, yeah.
Listen.
I'm talking.
At 3 minutes and 57 seconds, I have a
58,
little.
58. At 58, 59. That's me. I'm saying.
This is a trick where you get to keep talking. I know what you're doing. Okay. So the emails, the military person, we're going to have you a jingle next week. I'm going to plug some dates. When I plug my dates, I make it fun. That way people don't go, oh, it's plugs. You know, so get the You Make My Pants Want to Get Up and Dance, and I'm going to keep going to that. So anyway, I'll be at the real
quick. You Make My Pants Want to Get Up and Dance.
Okay, I'll be at the Comedy Cabaret. No, first I'll be at the DC Improv, the 14th, 15th, and 16th of October. The DC Improv, one of my favorite clubs, no bullshit, in the little room. So it's selling out quick. That's where I know you from, Sharif. Okay.
You Make My Pants Want to Get Up.
Okay. Then 14th, 15th, and 16th in DC at the small room at the Improv. Then I'll be at the Comedy Cabaret. Well, I'm going so out of order here. Then I'll be at PJ Ryan's in Phoenixville on the 20th of October.
You make my pants wanna get up and dance.
And then I'll be at the Comedy Cabaret in Bucks County. Oh, the owner calls me every day.
Hello, Hello, Todd. Make sure you say Bucks County, okay? Bucks County Cabaret. Okay, I don't know if you're at if your answering machine is full, but
oh, he really seems animate about it.
Yeah, well, like your answering machine is full. I don't have an answering machine. It's voicemail. Fucking idiot. What if I got that mad at this stupid, that the fucking piece of shit?
Bucks County.
Bucks County. And then I'll be at, so
where
I got all
it?
The
where
dates.
Where is that Bucks,
Bucks County?
Bucks County.
It's in Doylestown. It's actually a really
where's
cool
where's Doylestown?
Area.
You make my pants wanna get up and dance. Is that in Pennsylvania?
It's in Pennsylvania.
I don't know. Why?
It's okay. I don't mind you asking.
People want to know.
People do want to know. You're good. You're like an investigative reporter.
Yeah, somebody could be in Bucks County, Michigan.
Oh, you are hot today. This is our new report we have.
Okay,
all right.
So
and then Rory Scovel has
what else?
A new...
Is that all you got?
Oh, how dare you? Oh, that's my new style. After you insult me, I do Richard Simmons. I go, how dare you? Oh, my God, Daniel. You're fresh today. And then can we get a little background?
Brea, like, you're going to be in Brea.
Any of this?
You want to plug your Brea?
Oh, yeah, I'll be in Brea the last week of... October with Daniel Kino. I'll be in Brea. So that's just call, get the information from Brea. Okay. That's fun. Look how much fun we're having just on the plugs. Do we have an artist? And what?
I was going to say Rory.
Oh, Rory.
I bought his album today.
Thank
it's
you.
Amazing.
It is.
It's so funny.
I'm so glad you said that. First of all, I would expect nothing less of Rory Scovel. But if you're a fan of comedy, but you go, you know, I've never heard of Rory Scovel. Scovel. I always say everybody's name wrong. What if at the end they find out Todd was doing that on purpose? That fucking son of a bitch. Get Rory's CD.
Yeah, it's called Dilation.
Yes, and it is. I listened to a little bit of it today, and it was really, really good.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And is it funny? Lynn's over there. I'm going to tell you who Lynn is in a little bit. He's the what the fuck? He's the guy that makes all those jingles, and he's here today. And I love jingles, and I love Lynn, and then the sketches. We're going to play them on the next week, or maybe I should play them now. No, play them next week. But you don't need to send in any more sketches. I want to say this. Here's what happened. There were some really funny ones. I've rehearsed saying this so much because I don't want to offend anybody. There were some really funny ones. It really made me laugh. They really were. And then there were some that the sound quality was bad. And I thought, I don't want to send them in because it's too much to go through them. And I'm not going to. If there's somebody new that's never sent one before, I'm not insulting anybody that's creative. So I'm not going to play one because maybe the sound quality was bad and say something, you know. So we're just not going to take any more. We're not going to take any more sketches. But we do have a few that we're going to play. A few
okay.
that we got.
That I didn't know this.
Oh, you didn't know that? Well, you were off last week. Okay, so then we have that. And then there's a new water ice place that opened up. I got a
new
free...
New what?
Shut up. I got a free water ice yesterday.
Water ice?
No, the truth is it's my manager, Alex Murray, his assistant, Peter, his somebody in his family. I got to go to this water ice place. It's 8717 Santa Monica Boulevard, and it's called Snow Bar. I hope I'm saying it right.
Is this a real thing?
Yes, it's supposedly like this unbelievable water ice. Like you eat it, and it's like the hot washcloth. You're gonna
water ice. You're
shaved ice.
Shaved ice.
Shaved ice. Water ice is a Philadelphia thing.
Shaved ice.
Oh, shh. Hide all my Philadelphia friends.
You make my pants wanna get up and dance.
Okay, well, what do they shave the ice off of? Like what's? It's like flavored ice.
No, it's. Let me tell you something. If you're thinking of a snow cone where you get it from the park, no, it's crunchy. You know, I used to, when I was a little kid, I used to go, oh, more juice. You know, the syrup they would pour in there?
Yeah.
I would want so much. I don't care. I don't care. It was good. I just wanted so much syrup. I was like, more. Could never get enough. Even when I went to Dairy Queen when I was little, I was like, keep pumping that fudge on there. What are you fucking, is it your fudge?
Did you swear like that when you were?
No, I didn't swear like that. Inside my head, I did.
Fucking idiot. I want more fudge.
So that's that. We got all that out of the way. We're going to read some emails. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know what we're doing. So where were you? You were – okay, everyone's good. Everyone's happy. You got your earphones. I would imagine people listen with earphones. Most people. How many people do you think are listening with earphones versus maybe they got it over the stereo in their house? What do you think? This is good talk.
I would say 90% of listeners are probably earphoning in it.
What well, about if they're in their car?
Thank you.
I would say that's 10% of.
Well, you're gonna be surprised. I have the answers
in their house.
I have the answers.
What are the answers?
I'm gonna tell you what they are as soon as we come back after this break.
You make my pants wanna get up and dance.
Let this one play out.
You make my face wanna grin. You make my knees kneel down and bleed. Honey, won't you kiss me again?
We have a guy coming in that's gonna do an actual version of "You Make My Pants Wanna Get Up and Dance," Sharif. We're gonna and he's gonna come in. the next show and do a live version of You Make My Pants Want to Get Up and Dance. I'm very excited. And by the way, if you don't know where that song's from, go YouTube Engelbert Humperdinck, 1982, Las Vegas Hilton, and it's just so much a sign of the time. It's just such a weird piece. He was like Elvis in his day, and now he's like probably 45 in the video, and he's, but anyway, and speaking of Las Vegas and Elvis and all those people, you were in Vegas. How was it, Daniel?
It was great. I realized yesterday that when I left that I didn't leave the hotel the entire time I was there.
I never do.
I got there on Tuesday, and I never left the hotel. I would just go to my room, go to the show, go to my room.
I realized something. I'm not doing my real voice right now. I've been having this affected. I never do. It's not the way I talk. I never do. That's the way I talk. Is he here?
Oh.
Lynn was in Vegas, and he didn't know you were there? And you were working with, and you were working with.
I was working with Nick Griffin, who's the great Nick Griffin, one of the funniest guys out there. And he's a very private person, right? He's very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very excited to work with him because I've met him at clubs here and there, but we never really hang out. And we hang out for an entire week, and now I feel like I know him less than I did before.
Oh, but he couldn't be a nicer guy.
He could be a nicer guy.
If you explain it like that, people think, oh, is he not a nice guy? No, he's a great guy. He's just, you know what? Wouldn't you rather that than the guy who's overcalling you every day?
No, I love it. He's just a great guy.
Remember the story about Avi Lieberman?
When
he worked with Jimmy Dore?
Yeah.
And he goes, want to see a movie tomorrow? And Jimmy Dore goes, yes. I know you know the story, but I'm telling the listeners. Jimmy Dore goes, yes. And Avi goes, what time should I wake you? He goes, never.
You never wake me up.
You never wake me. Well, you don't wake me. Oh, yeah, you're going to wake me. You wake me. When we wake up naturally.
When I call you.
Yeah, we'll go see a movie. Plan. And if the movie's already over, we won't see a movie. All right.
Avi.
Let me get my real voice. This, I think I'm, when I have the headphones on, hello, hello, hello. And I go, oh, and I have this voice. But what's my real voice like? Hold on. Hey, Lynn, you mean me? Hey.
That's how I know you.
That's how you, like when I call you, is that what it sounds like?
That's exactly what it sounds
Maybe
like.
Maybe because my headphones are on, I'm aware. Hold on, let me take my headphones off. So you were in Vegas, wasn't that fun?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound different
to you. That sounds more natural,
actually. It sounds nothing. You're not like, oh my God.
No, that sounds...
Shut up, come on.
If I close my eyes, I see Todd Glass.
Hey,
yeah.
You want to get a hot washcloth and wipe your... Everybody, get a hot washcloth. Come on. Get a hot washcloth.
What if you went through your whole life and then somebody played your tape of you and that's what it sounded like?
And then I put my headphones on and then I'm aware of what I sound like and then I go back to this voice. All right. So everything's... did anything else happen fun in Vegas? Anything worth talking about? If not, no big deal.
I won a little bit of money.
Oh, you did? You won $300 one night.
One night. And then I thought, well, I'll gamble another 100. Said, you know. And then I won again.
A thousand. You know, it's funny when you win money, everyone thinks you're treating for dinner. No, I'm not.
No, I could use $1,000.
Yeah, what do you think? Any money? Well, you know, that's what you do if you're loaded and you win and it's free money and you go, hey, I'm treating everyone to dinner. Yeah, you know what that means? If most people win $1,000, that means you're instead of $14,000 in debt, you're $13,000 in debt.
Yeah.
I don't got money. Oh, yeah, now that I have $1,000, I want to buy you a fucking $50 dinner or whatever it is. By the way, you know what I realized about Vegas? Last time we were there, and you don't have to have a lot of money to do this. If you're going to have to dinner with people, you know, fairly, you know, not loaded, but, you know, have a little bit of money, you don't have to wait in line. If you have $50, it's 50-50. If you have 50 bucks to hand the maitre d' at a restaurant, 50-50. $100, boom, you're seated within 10 minutes. So you just add it to everybody's bill. Like if you're going out with like six or seven people.
That's a good idea.
When that happens, I just fork up the money. I walk up to the maitre d', I try 50. It depends on the group you're with. If you know everyone, you give 100 or 50 or 100, and then you go, okay, 10 minutes. And if you say 50 and they say no, and then you pull out a $100 bill, then they'll, you know.
No, that's great. I actually do that if you're not in Vegas, if you're at a regular bar and there's a line to get in. No one ever thinks just $20 will get you and you don't have to
pay. Oh, to a regular bar, you're right.
Like no one thinks to offer him $20. You're going to spend that on drinks, you know, without even batting an eye. $20, you don't have to wait in line. Any bar in Hollywood.
You make my pants want to get up and dance. You make my face want to grin.
No, I used to do that when right after 9/11. God, they were the good days. No one traveled. It was so much fun.
Everybody got along.
Yes. People talked to each other. I was happy when a few months passed, a little less talking to each other. Anyway, Because I was on the plane, some guy turned to me, he goes, how you doing? I go, what are you scared, you pussy? You're trying to start up idle conversation? What I did on the plane was I would give, and there was those lines that were just gargantua. Here's $25. I always have two prices. 20, they might blink an eye at it. I don't know why. A few times I went up with 20. Oh, man. Something, I don't know what it is, but the 25. But 25 bucks, 20, 25 bucks to the luggage guy. You have to walk up. You have to be clever. Mm-hmm. You have to go, hey, man, if I took care of you, can you, you know, 25, can you? He goes, you know, wait over there. Yeah. He'd walk over. I'd have to wait max 30 seconds or a minute.
Yeah, I've traveled with you. I've seen you do that.
Yeah, you've seen that. It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's cool.
And I never do it where you look bad. I don't know what the point is.
Tip the maids in the hotel? Like, if you stay in a hotel, what do you do?
Well, it's none of your business.
You make my pants wanna get up. That's a good point.
No, in the hotel, that's a really good question. I didn't used to tip until 3 years ago. Oh. And I don't know if it's maybe even 2 years. You go through the stages where I didn't tip at all, and then I learn you're supposed to, but then I still didn't tip. Now I do. Now, especially with the recession, now I do tip. I just know that everyone's a little short of money. Well, I give
You just leave at the end of the stay.
At the end of the stay, I do. I leave they say a dollar a day. I hope that's right. So I give a dollar a day, or you know, sometimes I just, if I'm there for 2 days, I throw down a $5 bill. Yeah. You know. But do you?
Yeah. Yeah. I only learned that you're supposed to a couple of years ago myself.
Who told you?
A friend of mine who
What's his name?
It's a woman.
Oh, where does he live? Let me get her on the phone.
Family friend.
No, why would I doubt you on this story? Let me make a quick call over here. Bing, bonk, bonk, bonk.
She ran a service. You know how, like, in Southern California, it's a lot of, Latino
mm-hmm.
women and who do, like, all that maintenance work.
Mm-hmm.
In Florida, there's a lot of Russians. She's Russian. She used to run maid service. Anyway, is the story boring?
No. I'm just getting something ready.
So
she
said, you're supposed to tip dollar.
Oh, it's boring now.
If you don't tip dollar, they curse you.
Oh, really?
That's what she said.
She's right.
They wish you bad luck. You leave, they go, oh, I hope he sucks or something.
Okay, guess who's here? Tom Wilson. So what we're going to do is let's get him. We're going to play him in with some real music. And then I want to talk about toddlers and tiaras later. Oh, I saw on the front of people, gone too far. I don't know, maybe dressing your daughter up like a whore. But I got a different outlook on it. I have more to say than I did before. Who wants to go open the door for Tom? So Tom Wilson's coming in. I wanted to give him a real live intro because I've known him forever. He deserves it. Okay, you ready? Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Wilson.
Thank you. Thank you.
First person to get a real live intro. We've never done it. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Wilson, one more round. You want to give them their stop?
Oh. Way down inside.
Give them some echo. I like it already.
Woman, you need me.
I love it.
That was amazing.
I love it. Well, you fucking rock. I love Tom Wilson.
You got to put those on.
Oh, yeah. So I like to hear you.
Coming in.
Tom, I bought those headsets. I cleaned them for alcohol with you. All right, Tom, here's what we're going to do. I guess we don't... We're going to play you on. Tom, I was so excited that you came. We were going to take a break right now and then say hi, but you're fine to just go?
I'm fine to go.
Okay, let's play them on. We made a pre-recorded intro for you. Put your headphones on. That's why I want you to hear it. Okay, you ready? Through the headphones.
Tom Wilson.
Nice.
Tom Wilson is here tonight on
the Todd Glass Show. So get ready for the show. We're bringing Tom. Tom Wilson is here. We've got Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson is here.
He's bowing. He's doing high kicks. Even though it's people just hear it, I
That's
like
right.
that you're
We've got
just doing high
Tom
kicks.
Wilson on the show.
Oh, I like it.
Tom Wilson is here.
All right.
So
let's play it out.
Yeah.
Be patient. Take a deep breath.
If I can make it with Todd,
yeah,
I'm gonna make it anywhere.
Tom
Wait, there's more?
Wilson on the Todd Glass Show.
All right.
Listen, this is going to sound really weird.
You have to go?
No, could you just play that again?
I'll play it again.
The whole thing?
Yes.
And we could just stare at each other? That'd be great.
Maybe.
And just then after that, just do it one more time, like the third time, as everyone's just staring at each other going, is he going to ask the fourth time?
I would do it.
Do you think he is? I don't know if I should do it now, the fourth time.
I
should say no the fourth time.
And I would say five times.
Hi, Tom.
Daniel.
How you doing? Nice. I forgot.
On a show.
So anyway.
Good to see you.
Tom?
Yes.
You got to let me give you a little back. Give the listeners a little backstory. So I teased it a little. Start off a little sappy, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Do we need introductions to the guys coming into the room right now?
No. They're fine. Okay. They're fine. I met Tom when I was... it's going to be a little sappy, but I think it's important. I met Tom when I was 15. Maybe I don't need those either. No, I like them. We're talking headsets or no headsets right now. So I met Tom when I was 16 years old. I went down for the first time I ever went to a comedy club in Philadelphia, and it was called the Comedy Works. And I went in. I had no idea what comedy would be or what it would be like. And I went in, and you were headlining, and we love Tom Wilson. All my friends in high school, we used to go watch it, and we would go week after week after week. And here's the part, and then we're going to go, that I always say, sometimes when someone's complimenting you to your face, although it's nice to hear, it could be awkward. So just sit there, just take it. But you, like, some people can act nice in sporadical moments, but you were always a really decent person. And I'm sure that's part of who your fiber is. And also, I bet it's part of that you know that that's a good way to act. That if you're in a mood, you go into a club and you were always nice. And after the show, we wanted to meet you. And then when you came out in here and you were doing Back to the Future, I called you, and like, you called me back that day. Every single time I called you, you called me back. So now when I meet new young comedians, again, I'd like to think it's because who I am, but I always think Tom fucking Wilson called me back no matter what. So, I think that's good. And, you know, so many times we complain about people, oh, they're jerks, they're not, but you have a great reputation for just being a decent guy. I'm just telling you because I think people that are hearing it know why. You want someone to know that. Does that make sense? Anybody?
It makes perfect sense, Todd, and I appreciate it very much. And what I say, I think, about that, because I always say something, which is I think actors, comedians, musicians, artists have this cultural license to be a jerk. People just assume, well, he's a performer guy, and a lot of them are kind of jerky because they're temperamental, because they've got so much going on in their spirit or whatever to share with people that they have to be rude to people. I think that's completely bogus, and what I do is just act like a human being.
Right.
Which is just to be nice to people.
I know.
And just to you know, to meet people, mm-hmm. and be nice. And when their family comes, you meet them because that's the nice thing to do, right? And when someone needs some help, if you can do it, you help them. Why? Because that's what you should do. Because that's what normal people that I like and that I was raised to be, that's
right.
what they do. So I'm just doing the stuff that, you know, that my mom and dad did for their friends. They weren't in show business, but my dad and mom helped a lot of people, and I try to help a lot of people. And that's just, you know, and I don't mean it, you know, I just mean take me off the pedestal. I'm just being normal, like yeah. millions of people out there who are just great people and who you and I and Dan, you get to meet in comedy clubs mm-hmm. who come up after the show.
Yeah, and I remember even when my dad, you know, my dad died, but like he saw me at the Comedy Works, and like it sort of for me like legitimized it because he went in and there was like and you were the headliner and it was like this, you know, packed, just this place that was packed, and you left and there was 300 people waiting to come to the next show, and my dad saw me open up for you, and then like you were nice afterwards and you went over and that meant the world to me. Like it sort of, I remember that, like, oh, my dad saw me at that show, so he sort of saw me do well and you were nice to him. So But anyway, so I've known you forever, and those days in Philadelphia.
But those were amazing times mm-hmm. when you were trying to, you know, my mom and dad too. I was taking acting classes, doing plays or whatever, but I was doing this thing downtown 7 nights a week. I was just taking the train, going downtown and performing places. They didn't really know what it was. What are you doing? Well, I'm doing a show and I'm singing or I'm doing comedy at these various, you know, nights that disco over there has Thursday night comedy and this place, you know, the restaurant that you got to go with three guys in a car into New Jersey to do. But your mom and dad came, my mom and dad finally, they come downtown. And yeah, it was at that time when just every show was sold out. It was just such an incredible electricity.
How old were you at this point?
I started in 1979. So I started, I was performing and doing improv-y stuff when I was about 19. So we're talking
Wait, can
about
I ask you something just a little bit before that. I don't know if this is true or not. I read this on the internet. Were you in a debate team with David Brooks?
Yes, I was. David Brooks, the New York Times columnist and the pundit on NewsHour,
right.
PBS, was my debate partner in high school.
Do you still talk to him?
Occasionally. We email back and forth. I talk to him about his books and everything. He's just a brilliant guy.
Yeah, really smart
and,
guy.
And he's a really, really smart guy. And yeah. And we went
to Arizona State.
Eventually, yeah, eventually.
I was a nerd.
That's why I was on Chris's Nerdist podcast, and I said, yeah, I just grew late in high school. But in high school, I was president of the debate team. I played the tuba.
And you were like a straight A student, right?
I was not a straight A student. I wasn't even an F student.
Oh, really?
I was like an incomplete student. I was just, you know.
But how'd you go to college? I mean, you graduate. Like, what did you?
I got let's say pretty high scores in the SAT. I did well in the SAT. I did very well in the ACT in like English and composition and that kind of stuff. So that pretty much got me into college. But well, that's a very long story that probably people don't want to hear. But I was very sick when I was young. I was a really sick kid. In the 4 years of high school, I was really absent for half the time. I was absent for about 2 years of high school in the hospital and all that stuff. So it wasn't being dumb or anything. It was first of all being sick and missing a lot of stuff. But then because I was an artistic kid and I was mm-hmm. in plays and I was doing music. So I was very easily cast off by teachers. I was very easily just like kind of thrown in the trash can. This guy, we don't know what he's about. We're not into his thing. He's just a problem. So out. I'm not paying attention to him. I came back to a math class once. I think it was either 9th or 10th grade. The teacher literally, I got out of the hospital. The teacher said, I'm sick of teaching you. So here, he in front of the whole class, he takes, you know how the wooden chairs that they would have, mm-hmm. like dragging it across mm-hmm. a wood floor, and he drags it. So the chair just across the whole floor. He slams it down next to a window. He takes a book, one of the math workbooks. He throws it onto the desk. He goes, here, work yourself. I'm sick of teaching you.
Why was he sick of teaching you?
Because I guess, you know, he felt he had to do extra work or meet me after school or help me with an assignment or whatever. And so I was just kind of too much for him, I guess. So he just gave up. And being, yeah, of course, and being an artistic kid, what do you do? Did I do math homework in the workbook? No, I looked out the window.
I know. Yeah. I remember
that was
thinking.
It. That was like click and I was done. I'm just done. Dude, you did me a huge favor because I know I'm not going to need to use this in life. And I know I'm not going to be a high school math teacher. So, okay, I'll just use the time to think up stuff.
So you went, when you went down to like those places in Philadelphia, probably somewhat like me, and you were doing like stand-up comedy. You called it right?
Yeah, stand-up. Yeah.
Right. It's not like we're 100 years old. We didn't call it stand-up then.
Called it talking loudly to your friends about things that you notice.
Oh, they didn't call it stand-up back then?
Look, trees.
Observational quips.
Trees are weird, huh?
So, do you remember, like, some of the acts that we would get to work with in Philadelphia? Can you rattle off, like, because I know some, like, and people are like, you know, back in the day, like, back in Philadelphia, they were coming in from New York and L.A., like, it was almost everybody, right? Like, Jerry Seinfeld and Jay Leno.
Jerry Seinfeld, Larry Miller, Bill Maher.
Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy, Paul Reiser. Eddie Murphy was there. Eddie Murphy came to Philadelphia after winning fourth place in the New York stand-up comedy competition. So he wins fourth place. He comes to Philadelphia to perform with an entourage. Okay. So we're all looking like, what?
And he's about like 18?
Yeah, he was 17 years old, maybe 18.
I remember seeing his check, but was he there twice? Because the time I saw him there, he had been on SNL, just been on SNL.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the beginning. I think he maybe had been cast in it when he came to Philadelphia or whatever, but he came down and, you know, and he was a wonderful comedian. But the most unbelievably confident person I'd ever been around. I had, you know, a guy with five guys around who, you know, people, well, you know, he won fourth place.
Wait, what? I remember looking at his check in the office of the Comedy Works and I saw he made $500. And Tom, I was like, are you shitting me? Like, that was $500. God, just can you, and me and my other comedian friends were like, can you imagine just like making $500 just to do that?
Right. Right.
And who would
think? Was that one night?
No, that was for four shows, I think.
Oh, probably Friday and Saturday, yeah.
Friday and Saturday, or two shows, or four. But
now, what year did you move out? Can I move? Can we?
I remember.
I'm not even done with him saying I'm a nice guy.
Okay, let me go a little more.
We're three things.
Sorry, we got to back up. We got
to
back up
eventually. But what would you like to?
No, I would like to know. So, what year do you decide? Okay, it's time. And like, what prompted that decision? Okay, it's time to go move to LA. What year was that and why did you make that?
Okay, I'm going
to
interject here real quick.
Interject, by the way.
Not only.
Another nice way of saying.
Yeah, is interrupt. When we used to go see Tom, like, you know, for anybody that loves stand up now, I'm sure there's people, kids listening that just remember the first time they went, you fall in love with not only doing stand up comedy, but before I did stand up comedy, I fell in love with going to see it. It was unbelievable.
Todd, you are the biggest stand up comedy fan of just the art form, just what it is itself, right, that I've ever known in my life. I wasn't, like, I liked comedy. I went to see Steve Martin or I went to see, you know, some stand up comics and it was fun. But, you know, some of my earliest comedy memories, because you were what, 16? I must have been 19.
Yeah, it wasn't that big of an age gap, right, except then, like, 3 years senior.
You were
like
a high school kid who came so often that they stopped charging you for a ticket and they gave you free Cokes. They just like, yeah, look, give the kid
ice.
A soda. Give the kid a soda and just let him sit there. So I'm performing over and over and over.
Right.
And there's, you know, young Todd, this just beaming face. Just, I mean, yes, it was about my act and my suit, but you were just electrified by the whole experience.
So this has to do with when he asked when you moved, and then we heard that you were moving to LA. So me and my friends decided that we should go see you more. Oh, no, not me and my friends, me. I go, okay, he's leaving. I heard last week I was there. He's leaving. So I said, we should start going down there more. My friend Jim Madden goes, Todd, you go every weekend. What could you do more? Like, how could you go more? So then I would stay for the late show and just sit there and love it and just couldn't get enough of it. So it was about what year when you...
I moved to LA in 1981. So I was living in New York for a while and studying acting and doing plays and things like that. Then I came back to Philadelphia for a while. Then Todd started to see me, started to work in Philadelphia all over and New Jersey and all these gigs and go up to New York and do a set of Catch or something like that. But then... It was just for acting and for just gigs. I was the first guy, I think, to say, I think I'm moving to LA.
And you were right.
Which camp did you go into? Improv, Comedy Store?
Well, Rich Hall was a friend of mine because Rich performed at the Comedy Works in Philadelphia a lot. You know, do you know Rich? Or you know,
I don't know
Rich.
Who he is. Yeah,
you know
I
who
don't
Rich
know,
is.
I don't know.
So Rich was a friend of mine. We you know, we got to be friends off of his performing at the Comedy Works a lot. And he said, listen, here's how it's going to work. I mean, you come to L.A. and you do that open mic. You do the audition night at the Improv and the Comedy Store and you do it a bunch of times and one of them just takes a shine to you. You know, one of them you're just unlucky. One of them you're lucky. You just end up working there. That's just how it goes for everybody. So all of my friends were improv guys. I knew everybody at the Improv. I knew no one at the Comedy Store. I get out of the car, went to the Improv. You know,
went to the Improv first.
Went to the Improv first, figuring, yeah, I'll be an Improv regular, and I know the guys, and everything will work out. So I went to the Improv, kind of the open mic, take the number
and
out
who's
of a bucket
in the scene?
Thing.
Who's in the Improv scene at this time? Like, this is 1981. Who are the guys who are, like, playing the Improv?
Well, Jay Leno. You know, wow. Jay Leno and the guys who were from New York, but everyone was moving from New York at the same time as I was moving from Philadelphia. So the same, you know, Paul Reiser,
Bill Maher,
Richard Lewis,
Jerry Seinfeld, Larry Miller, all those guys, Rick Overton, all those guys. Flip Schultz. Yeah. Rick Overton and I lived in the same apartment building in New York. So Rick came out there. Anyway, so I went to the Improv. And I kept drawing the numbers, how you try to get on stage, and I just didn't get on stage. And I thought, and me being absolutely the, you know, I was ready to take on the world, man. Just watch this. Let me on the stage because I'm taking over show business, Mork, or whoever's in my way. so I get to, so I just didn't get on stage.
So you go to the Comedy Store.
Yeah. So, yeah, but that night everyone was crushed. I just still remember at the Improv, it's 2 a.m. You know, 40 people are clearly not going to get on stage. And one guy walks across the darkened Improv restaurant to the piano and starts playing There's No Business Like Show Business. And I mean, it was out of a movie. I was in LA for like 3 days, you know, and I'm sitting there going, okay, well, and the guy, there's no business like, that's probably for me. Little by little, it was out of a movie. Little by little, one person after another person after another person starts. Everything about it is appealing. It's 2:15. Everything the traffic will allow. So I start singing with people. When you are stealing that extra, and I feel like I love this place, man. Yes, I came to the right place. So. The Comedy Store audition night was the next night. I got on stage and it was unheard of at that time. You had to come back like week after week to try to get people to know who you were. Just luck or bad luck, whichever one you want to call it. But Mitzi was just in her booth. I went on stage. She said, "You're a regular."
And became a regular.
You are not even unpaid like the before guy. You are absolute regular. Boom. Call in tomorrow for spots.
You're a star. She right away recognized you should be you're a
she
star.
She just went, boom. Call in for spots. You're in.
And then who's playing the Comedy Store now? This is Yakov Smirnoff.
Yakov Smirnoff.
David Letterman.
Andrew Clay. David Letterman had gone to New York already.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't yet doing his daytime talk show. Okay. You know, he had a daytime show before he did the nighttime show. So, but David, he was like the
Dice.
He was the host and MC at the Comedy Store for years, Letterman.
Wow.
Andrew was not Dice then. He was Andrew Clay.
By the way, when I went to the Comedy Store, because I wanted to be, because you were a regular there, and same thing. I mean, I was ready, and I went in there, and I was like, you know, had my hair parted down the side. It was good. I put a little extra gel in there, afterwards, not a regular. And I think I found out the next day, and I was because it's not as much like that today, where one place takes you or the other. It seemed back then it was like. You know, if the store doesn't like you or the Improv doesn't like you, what do? Pack up and go back home? At least maybe that's how it seemed to me, but I could have been wrong. But
well,
and I called you.
Those were the two places.
And I called you, and I was crushed. I was like, wait, I was like crying.
Mitzi said no.
Yeah, and
then Bud said yes.
But the fact is, you know, she could have been on the phone. That's the thing. You had to come back for months because guys, maybe someone was nice enough to tell you, you know, she was in her booth, but she took a phone call while you were on, and you know, and it didn't work out because she didn't. She wasn't paying attention. Yeah.
You were right on the money. Like you told me because you've been out here a little longer. Well, I don't know how many years, maybe three, and you were like, Todd. just take it easy. You'll go down to the improv. It's like you knew the ending. You went, Bud could make you. It's not. Please, Todd, you really. I felt better after I hung up the phone and I was probably crying. And then I went to the improv two nights later and Bud goes, Todd, call me Monday. I'll give you spots.
Right.
I'm like, he won't remember. And then on the way out, he goes, remind me you're from Philadelphia so it jogs my memory who you are. And I went outside and I turned the corner of the improv.
This is like right after you showcased.
Right after I showcased. Uh-huh. I went on, I turned the corner and I was like, God fucking yes. I couldn't believe it, like, that you were right. Like, I'm ready to pack it up and go home because, you know, I thought, well, the improv's not going to like me. But I wanted to be, it took me a long time because I wanted to be where you were at, you know, like, sure. You were at the store. That's where I wanted to go. But everything was ended
up good.
Oh, sure.
And I went to the, and that night at the improv, I remember because Rich Hall was there and I'm trying to meet Bud and Rich says, you know, come here. I'll introduce you to Bud. And absolutely true. So Rich goes, hi, Bud, this is a friend of mine from Philadelphia, Tom. And Bud goes, get out of my way. okay.
Wow. That was it.
Boom. Get out of my way. Bang, he just walks by, and you know, and you're left with your buddy Rich, and he kind of shrugs his shoulder, like, well, okay, didn't work out.
Wow. Rich Hall, by the way, influenced me in the sense that I like music and I like doing stuff like that, and he, to me, taught me that you can do inventive. It was silliness, but it was an inventive silliness. Like, I loved the music, and it was great. And it was like, here's a guy, and all the comedians respected him, and you know, and it was really. I used to really get a kick out of all the stuff he would do. Like, he had, you know,
and he took it to Saturday Night Live, mm-hmm. making those short films that he made, which were very, very creative.
Yeah, I'm still a huge Rich Hall fan. And do you talk to Rich anymore, or do you know?
I don't. Rich is in Europe most
right.
of the time.
And he had like a one-man show that he was doing, which was really popular, mm-hmm. if I remember.
Very popular,
right.
And he does that Edinburgh Fringe Festival mm-hmm. and those kinds of things.
He was a nice guy also.
Oh, Rich is a great guy.
Really
Rich
nice
great guy.
Guy.
He's got a place in Montana, out in Livingston, Montana, I think, but is most of the time in Europe.
All right.
So, hey, I wanted to, go ahead.
No.
I wanted to know, we don't have to go there yet, but, if you would do some of your, I hope I say it right. Haiku, you know what? Let's take a break.
Why do we take a break?
We do take breaks.
Can
there be
commercials for car?
I know. No, not that.
Oh, okay.
We'll take a break. You know, we should play some, Charlie Pride, cause Chris Hardwick, he wants me to play more music, so I mean,
really?
I don't know what to. Yes, he's like, you got to play more music. Yeah, he's. I'll talk about it up there, but he's really coming down hard.
Really?
Yeah, he's not
saying something.
Well, between me and you, are the mics off?
Her name was Lola.
The whole podcast thing is supposedly you don't got the corporate people.
What?
Yeah, you know, you do a podcast, you can just do whatever you want.
Of course.
Well, it's not like that. Man, we'll be back here. Some Charlie Pride.
Ever I chance to meet some old friends on the street. They wonder how does a man get to be this way. I've always got a smiling face for any time and any place.
We're back.
It's good to see you again.
Are we back?
Shh, nobody's yelling.
47:15. We're back.
All right. So, I love hearing stories about, you know, I know that I don't know any stories to do with the Comedy Store or, you know, anything. I'll let you go.
I have a question. So fast forward now, and I'm not going to dwell on this, a lot.
This makes me nervous.
You dwell on whatever you like, Daniel.
But just like, do you remember what the audition process, like how it came up? The project, the Back to the Future, how it came up, how the first audition and how it all unfolded and like the day how you find out you got it. That was the biggest thing you've done up to that
point.
I
remember it very well.
Okay. Is that okay? Do you mind talking about that?
I'm talking about my memory of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not spilling it out for you. I remember it. What about the
audition, right? You go in there, yeah. And you get the whole script. Did you know what the thing was going to be?
No. I think these are good. Just like one word question.
Yes, that's it. Then we move on.
You can ask the questions, okay. And then I just answer them. I answer them truthfully, but then we move on.
Something funny about like.
Okay. How about this? I'll narrow it down. Do you remember the day you found out you got it?
Yes, I do.
And then who calls you?
Yes, I do. My agent called me.
Do you remember where you were?
I was I think I was in the living room of my apartment, let's say.
All right, I'm done.
Who was your roommate? Who did you live with at the comedy store?
What time was it? What were you wearing?
Yeah, it was a long and extensive audition process. Long. I went in and my agent at the time got me the audition for this big movie. Before then, I had done TV commercials. You know, I was the biscuit guy in Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah. You're laughing, Daniel. Why is that? Biscuits are funny to you?
No, yes, first of all, yes.
No, I was I introduced biscuits at Kentucky Fried Chicken in the national commercial.
You did?
Yeah.
You were the
Yeah, was I was a construction worker. I'm on a construction site. I'm having chicken. I'm having a refreshing drink. Something's missing. Katie, what is that? Crushed buttermilk biscuits made from scratch. Boink. It was a biscuit that I didn't have that at the end of the commercial I had. And then...
And I remember everything. I would tell my... We all got to high school. Remember Beechtree? Isn't that an ad you did? For some
gum, like a gum or
no,
something.
No, it was Beechtree.
Oh,
it
Beatrice.
Was like
Beatrice. Was Swiss Miss Hot Chocolate for the 1984 Olympics. Yeah, yeah. That was. I didn't know. You know, I got this. I got a hot chocolate commercial.
Was that in L.A.?
What,
the 84 Olympics?
That was in L.A. In fact, yeah, I went to the end of the marathon run, but the Beatrice, it was hot. Swiss Miss Hot Chocolate. So I thought, oh, I got a hot chocolate commercial. And then another actor goes, "Dude, this class I use." What does that mean? He goes, no, it's not Swiss Miss. It's Beatrice, the food company. They're going to play this during the, you know, during the Olympics, man. That's Class A. He goes, Class A, national commercial, ching, ching. So, Class A, national commercial, ching, ching. Yes, that's what I said. Ching, ching, baby. So, yeah, sometimes you would luck out on a thing like that, but a lot of commercials, you would shoot and you would get the shoot fee, Screen Actors Guild or whatever, and you got to join the union, but it aired very little. I got into the Actors Union playing Pete Merringer, the gold medalist in wrestling in the 1932 Olympics. Because I just looked sort of like the guy. You know, so they were looking like a guy who could kind of wrestle or look like I could wrestle.
What was this, a movie?
It was for the U.S. Olympic Committee. It was kind of fundraising for the Olympic Committee, and the Olympics are coming to Los Angeles. And we remember 1932, Pete Merringer almost pinned to the ground by the whatever, and you know, and he wins. So
it was like an industrial.
It was a public service, a PSA.
That's cool.
Which, you know what that means, Daniel?
What?
No ching ching. No ching ching. Public service. That means, you know, you get a shoot fee.
You get to
really
feel good.
You don't get, yeah.
Every commercial I got, that's what I heard the same thing. It was like, oh, you got to go out for commercials. You go to a big national spot. And maybe it was different back then. But whenever I got one that was like, oh, you got to ad for Chevy, I'd be like, oh, fuck, this is it. You know, back then, I don't know, it could have been maybe 10,000. That would have been changed. That would have made my life easier.
Sure.
Would it make my life easier today? What am I fooling? 10,000. But it was always like, well, it's not a national ad. I go, oh, who's it for? It's for, you know, McCarthy Chevrolet. It's going to run with people, you know, they put you on hold at their dealership. I'm like, oh, how much does that pay? Oh. $800.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. But people don't know that that's how most actors make a living, is just doing, you know, commercials or guest star on a sitcom or whatever, or a part in a play or whatever. And you cobble together all of these parts and you make what can be a reasonable middle class existence. And a couple of them are surprises, but, you know, you better save your money because, you know, you could go the next. Great. You made $10,000 for a national commercial. Way to go, buddy. Here's 5 months of unemployment, you know, because you're just going to have a dry spell. And for the next 5 months, you're going to spend the gas and the time and all the effort to go to audition after audition after audition and just keep striking out, buddy.
It killed me, by the way.
And guys leave. That's why people, you know, pack the car and go home again, because they're going, oh, I thought, you know, you did Kentucky Fried Chicken and then you make money and then, you know, easy street. No, it's mostly, you know, working hard, just like being a carpenter or anything.
Some people are not affected by the auditions as much as other people. When I would get in the car after some of these commercial auditions, more the commercial auditions than the acting auditions. The acting auditions I didn't do good because, in all fairness, I wasn't prepared ever. So I never really blamed. Most people were pretty nice when I got into a room, in all fairness. I never have any great, you know, great memories of or bad memories of people being horrible. But I was so unprepared. I didn't know my lines. I would just sweat. But for commercial auditions, Tom, I would – get in the car and just be drenched, my shirt in sweat, and go, I can't do this. It would just make me – was it like that for you at all?
Absolutely. Or? It's horrible. The first commercial in L.A. I ever went out for of anything. You know, I'm fresh in town, and I was performing at the Comedy Store a lot, and an agent comes up. And the agent was a friend of the talent coordinator at the Comedy Store. So he used to come to just watch the shows and hang out. And I was a big guy that looked kind of young, energetic, all-American. He said, you know, you should go out for commercials. And at that point, I send me out for them. So I got an agent by just saying, listen, you don't even have to be my agent. All right. Just send me out on like three of them and just see. Just see. And that's how I got a theatrical agent, too. I just went like, look, I'm not asking you to be my agent. I'm asking you. I've heard about a couple of things that are out there. Just send me out for just those and see what happens. So I went out for the commercial that the guy sent me out for, but the first commercial I went out for was for the Volkswagen Rabbit. Remember that car? Mm-hmm. This little boxy car. And so I'm going to own commercials, and then I'm going to get a TV show and be the king of a sitcom, and then a movie star. And I'm going to, so yeah, you go to the commercial audition and you read the copy, and oh, it's a wedding, and you're the groom, and you're marrying a Volkswagen Rabbit. And the car is rolling down the aisle next to you, and you're holding the handle of the door of the car, and all it is, no lines, no nothing. They've got a video camera, and just says, okay, walk towards us, but keep looking at the car like you love it. So you're just walking forward slowly and just keep shooting the looks to the car that you love. And that's it. And I thought, I'm getting out of here, man. If you think that I'm selling out to marry a car on national TV, Wilson is, yeah, I'm here. Yeah, let me, you know, and you go in and you just go, well, it would be money. It would be more money than I have now. So sure, I'll try to pretend to marry a Volkswagen Rabbit.
Yeah, I love that example, because I always try to explain to my brother what they're like. And like, there's a perfect example of like, and it doesn't sound that bad if you tell somebody, because once I told my brother, I was like, he goes, well, why do you hate him so much? I go, and the last commercial audition I ever went on was for Ramada versus the Holiday Inn. And they go, you're going to be jumping up and down on this bed. And then you go, here at the Ramada Inn, of course, I'm remembering, you know, enough to not exactly, our beds are comfortable. But at the Holiday Inn, our beds are really comfortable. And then you have to bounce back and forth. One, you're bouncing higher. The other one, you're not bouncing as high. So my brother didn't understand. I go, do it, and I'll give you direction. So, you know, my brother goes, you know, he's like, I go, okay, you know, you're bouncing them down. My brother went, here at the Ramada Inn, our beds are pretty comfortable. But at the Holiday Inn, they're really comfortable. I go, hey, that's good. You're not as much, you're not ecstatic. You're more excited. And that's when exactly. The sweat would fucking pour exactly. Out of my pores.
Exactly. And that's what I think people don't understand. Even in a commercial is if you get the spot and you do that and you're bouncing on the bed and you're bouncing on the other bed and the guy comes up and just says, we needed about a second and a half faster. A second and a half? What do you mean a second? Yeah, about just a little bit. And you kind of, you have to do it, you know? Well, I auditioned for a commercial for a bunch of guys in a car battery. Like it was six guys together acting like a car battery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like they would be in the car battery with some car battery-like outfit on or something. And we're at this audition. So none of us, you know, so we're all looking at each other like, it's not even the piston of a car, like going up and down. It's a car bat. Like, what does a battery do? So finally, all the guys get together. The casting director comes out and the guy's like, hey, can we talk to you a second? What do you mean by like acting like a car battery? And the lady goes, I swear, she goes, just put it in your creative hopper and see what artistry comes out. She walks back in the room.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. So, you're in some small office somewhere in Hollywood with no clue, and you're going, you know, waving your arms. I'm electrical. I hope I can start the car with my energy. But that's what you end up doing.
You know the worst moment for me? Because then I knew they'd be in a bad mood. Now for acting auditions, my memory was usually people were pretty nice. Like when I got in the room, they knew you were uncomfortable. But commercial auditions was about 50-50. 50% they were like, oh, you know, this sucks, and they were awesome, and they made you relax. And the other 50, you got a temperamental little, you know, person on your hands. And this was the worst when this would happen, when you're waiting to go in, and then you hear this. Because you know things haven't been going right if you hear this.
Who's here for the a paper towel ad? Okay, can you guys come over here, please? Okay, when you go in, you're not crawling on the floor. You're a worm in that you're a worm. You're not an honest person. Okay, so there we go. All right. So, and I'd be like, oh my God, and then I would leave. I would leave.
Right.
And one time I left. I didn't tell this story. I left a commercial audition because I couldn't go in. And I was with a friend from out of town. And he goes, and we got in the car. He goes, Todd, it's, you know how you're, the easiest thing to do right now is just leave. And I went, you're right. He thought it was working like psychology. Oh. Like, you're doing the easy thing. Like I'd go, I don't want to, I don't want that type of life. They, yeah. I go, you're right. And I went, pulled out because, oh, I would just, you know, it would just, there's the corner. And by the way, some of this, it's my own. I don't like to have negative energy like this, but I'm 100% kidding, but 1% serious. If that's out of a scale from 101, there's that audition place where over in, it's when you get off at Bundy and there's a building, Bundy and Olympic. If I had a lot of money, some people would say blow
you mean
it up.
Lantana?
I think that's what it was.
It's like next to Office Depot.
I'm chipping
right?
in. What, to blow it up?
Well, I was going to say blow it up.
I'm chipping in.
Well, tell me if you down. Can talk me back into blowing it up.
Okay.
But hold on. Here's what I wanted to do. Buy it. That's the places where they had benches, just rows and rows of benches, not even chairs. And yeah, I get it. I want to, if I had, like what I always say, I always go Jim Carrey money, buy it, blow it up, or maybe if I'm in a more spiritual mood, you just clear it out, buy it, let everyone get all their stuff out of it safely, have police barricade around the room, and then.
I wasn't saying blowing it up with people in it, Todd. I'm not a murderer. I'm not a murderer, Todd. I would have the building cleared.
Oh, okay.
I would even have people, I would give people the opportunity to drive their cars away. For the next 10 minutes, get your car away from here.
And then
okay?
we're going to.
It's coming down.
When I think
this
blow up.
This is coming down.
Yes.
I would alert security.
Yes.
I would whatever.
And
I would
then
get
put a park for kids. Like do something positive there. Or maybe just dig a hole and just keep it roped off forever.
No, I would eventually build a park for kids. But a few weeks, I would stand on the rubble just going, ah! I have blown it up without hurting human beings.
Okay, you're not really angry. That guy shows up.
Yeah.
Hold on, you're not. I'm not acting! I'm having a nervous breakdown!
Okay, you're not blowing up. You're like, you're really successful. That's how you're blowing up. That's not...
But yes, going back to commercial auditions, they're very difficult, but some people do them well. I didn't do them that well. I have, I don't think I have them anymore, but I used to, you know, as the really conscientious actor, I'm going to write down every audition that I do and where it is, and then I'm going to have this record of it. So I'll know kind of my percentages and how I'm doing. Am I booking them? Am I not booking them? Like after 7 pages of just auditions that went nowhere, like I'm not going to do that anymore. But it takes a lot of confidence to keep doing it and to just think, look, I'm smarter than the commercial people. And if they don't pick me, they're making a mistake. And to think that after the 170th time they say no, to just go, I really think you're making a worse product by not having me in it.
Not. And by the way, I always say this. I'm not thinking, you're probably with me on this. I'm not thinking I'm above commercials. If you could, I have friends that go on, it doesn't make them sweat like me. Then yeah, if you could do that.
Well, commercials are over. Commercials are over.
Yeah, and what do you mean?
It's over. I mean, you can't. They don't play them as frequently or on regular television. You people. I mean, you know, commercials from the time when you could have a national network commercial on a Sunday night in prime time. That was a completely different kind of pay grade from a commercial now, which is, you know, you'll see people on commercials, and if they're playing on Lifetime and on ESPN and on up and down the cable thing, and you go, boy, that guy's working a lot. He's doing great. And you talk to the guy. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, I just got a check for 14 cents or something. So it's far less.
Yeah, it's so saturated
now than it once was.
I remember one thing you said to me, which was something I've always remembered ever since you said it to me. We were in.
I hope
this is good.
Remember, we were in Denver. Remember this? And you said, we were just talking about how to get into a right kind of state of mind for this business. And you said that a lot of people, you've seen a lot of people, and a lot of people still do this, they wait for the stage to fix their life. Where, like, if it's not going well, you think, well, the success, I'll just keep working, and the success from my business will fix all that other problems. Remember that conversation?
Of course, of course.
And it made so much sense to me, even like then. It just really opened my eyes. And I've thought about it ever since. That it's in fact, until you work on all that other stuff, that might not even ever happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The stage is no kind of medicine, you know? There's no medicine that seeps into you by being on stage. The stage is a magnificent way to share your creativity and your energy and your excitement about performing for people and many, many wonderful things that the stage offers. But if you think that it's offering you healing, you are going to be very damaged and you're going to be very upset. And in the evidence of way, way too many people that I know, you are going to die.
Yes.
You are going to be dead. Okay. Not to go there on a big comedy podcast.
No.
But the fact is, you know as well, Todd. Look, I kind of darkly joke. I'm a stand-up comic. I know a lot of dead guys.
Right.
You know, many of whom were staring at the stage going, why aren't you fixing me? I thought this, look, I've got the microphone in my hand and people are laughing. This should be helping fix me, right? And the stage just remains silent and go, it's just a wooden platform with lights on it, man.
Right. Right, right. Everything else is imaginary.
Right.
Were you attached to
the whole thing? You just invested in it. It just isn't. And the more you expect it to be that thing, the more unhappy and disappointed you're going to be. And the more you're going to fill whatever hole you have. And I'm sorry that there's a hole. And there's a hole in a lot of people, you know, and whatever you use to fill it, the stage isn't one of those things. Because look at it. And a lot of those dead guys were millionaires. Where if you talk to them the day before they killed themselves, you would go like, but everything's working out for you. I mean, everything.
Yeah.
And they don't feel that.
Unless your problems, someone said this, but unless your problems are financially, like, you know, you got a good head on your shoulders and you got your life organized and then financially it's stressing you out. Then sometimes the money can fix it if it was just financial. Then that's all that can fix. But
yes.
It can't fix emotional problems, obviously.
Right. Yeah, but you
if,
know,
if you're
guys,
a well-centered human being and right. you come from a good home, and oh, you just need a little bit of money. Yeah, that's not what we're talking.
Oh no, of course, I'm not. Yeah, I know that's not what you're saying.
But you also know the rich guys, and they're not done either.
No, because there wasn't
right.
the money.
Because the hunger,
the money wasn't the problem.
Money
wasn't
right. The hunger that led them to the place where they're now making an incredible amount of money is a hunger that keeps driving them forward.
Mm-hmm.
And the money is an offshoot of the work that they do. You know,
yeah.
most of them are about doing the work. And most of them, I think most of them that I talk to are kind of surprised that, you know, that this money comes in and you go, I don't know how it happened. I just kept working, you know.
And I never, here I go. Hope I say this right. I told, without mentioning names, some comedians that I know, I never doubt anybody's emotional state if they're very depressed and what it's, you know, and what where the state that they're in. But I've told a friend this once. I go, well, do you think, and you don't even have to answer me because it might be uncomfortable for you to say yes to this, but Do you think any of being dark and having your problems, there's an artsy coolness to it? Because if you do, then you're never going to fix it. But deep down, is there, like, I know some people, they sort of like being, they don't, because if you don't like, if you truly think, you go, no, I do not want to be like this. Well, then maybe you could fix it. But do you know people that sort of like being in that state?
At this point on a live microphone, we get to a point where we may begin sounding uncharitable toward people, where we may begin sounding judgmental. But the fact is, I've been doing comedy for 32 years, and I'm also a musician. So I know a lot of musicians and jazz musicians. I know painters. I know comedians. And yes, a part of the brokenness within them is, and a brokenness within me, is that longing which brings us in front of people to share what we have, to make something and create it and show people. But a lot of people, hey, sometimes myself included, okay, a lot of people revel in the dark tornado of their self, you know, of themselves, of their thoughts and their longings and their hunger for whatever, for that success or that approval or that kind of thing. So, and I think it's, look, I think it's probably a part of carpenters, orthodontists and, you know, and doctors and everyone to try to fight that within all of us. You know, that thing, well, that guy has that. Didn't anybody see my sets at the Comedy Store in 1985? I was blowing the. I should. Well, you know, what person isn't a human being? You know, that's being a human being. But man, you got to wrestle that guy. You got to wrestle that guy, or he's going to kill
you. Yes.
He's going to kill you, and then you just end up going, just that guy. Ah, did that bit in the at the Ice House in 1983. You think that's original, kid? What? And you know, my gosh.
Do you find that guy talking once in a while, and you have to be aware of it?
I'm pretty good at fighting that guy. And sometimes, look, sometimes, you know, I'm like the beast in Beauty and the Beast. You know, sometimes I got to lock myself in a room,
yeah,
virtually. And just say, look, I'm just playing the guitar a little bit, and I'm just writing, because you're just like anybody. You're just not feeling good. You're just not positive that day, you know. And sometimes, look, sometimes you're in some city somewhere, and you know, I call my wife every night, you know. But if whatever, you're just not feeling good, and you have a headache, and you had two shows, and the second show was really problematic, and you're just utterly exhausted, and you did four radio stations, and I that night, sometimes I don't call home, mm-hmm. You know, because I just don't want to subject my beautiful wife to that guy, you know, why?
Yeah.
So I'm at a hotel somewhere, and my sensible self is going, dude, go to sleep. You know, stop. It's happened a million times. You'll wake up and have breakfast and everything will be fine. Stop. Why do you do this to yourself? And, you know, and I just cut myself a break being a human being and just go, look, well, I think everybody does that sort of thing. Why subject your friends and people you love to that guy? Just kind of.
That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I know some people. My family doesn't listen to this, but that should just sometimes you don't have to just have the domino effect. Sometimes just stop. If you know, you don't have to just forward this on to everybody. You know, you can just stop, get a good night's sleep. You don't gotta, you know, make it, you know, what you're saying.
This has nothing to do. It'll sound like I'm talking about the movie and I'm not, but a while ago, a friend of mine, this is several years ago now, but it was really good, a good friend of mine. And we were having one of those honest conversations where I was not feeling good at all about how things were going or how I was being perceived by people, by casting people or by producers and everything. And my friend said, you know, if there's one thing I know about you, because I got bullied a lot when I was a kid, you know, and now I'm a big guy. So he said, if there's one thing I know about you, you really don't like bullies, you know, and you fought back at them your whole life. Why don't you come to your own defense? You know, why don't you fight them for you? You know, you would defend anybody. Why don't you defend yourself? And I was like, wow, it's true. It's true. Because that guy's going to show up late at night in almost everybody's life. But we don't have to listen to them.
Yeah.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm always wanting to learn. That's why when I say to somebody, like, I've said this before, but like, hey, I don't want to sound like I'm so positive or I'm being phony, and you don't either. You're coming off as, yeah, of course I'm a real person, and I get, but yeah, I just remind myself when I get jealous, of course I get jealous, but I just go, okay, you can do two things with this. You can make a right and turn it into bitterness, or you can make a left and turn it into motivation. I have those
moments. Todd, you, Daniel, myself, everybody. If we just come out of ourselves and just think, if you told yourself when you were that kid sitting in that comedy club what would have happened to you within the comedy world, you would still be doing cartwheels. You would be doing cartwheels. You know, it's unbelievable that we get to do this.
Yeah,
it's absolutely unbelievable that I absolutely can't believe that, you know, later in high school when you're thinking, I'm a weird kid, man, and I'm not going to be able to work in an office or a cubicle or whatever. I can't. Every job I had when I was 17, I was whatever. As a busboy, I couldn't listen to the chef goes, get that butter out there. Oh, I live to get your butter out to the tables, dude. Cause let me run. You know, I was just that kid.
Yeah.
So but I mean, that's kind of a good thing. But in a way, you're also going, my life is really going to be messed up because I just don't have the ability to live like other people. So I can't believe that I sort of took this weird off ramp and it worked.
You know, it's funny when you listen to like you talk, it's so funny. And I'm sure like a lot of comedians or musicians or anybody that's doing, you know, not a 9-to-5 type thing. I go, oh, my God, you went through that, too, because I remember thinking I was aware enough. Now, I had bad dyslexia. Like you said, some of it had nothing to do with whether you were smart or whether you weren't. Was it asthma?
Yeah, I was sick. Huh?
And you know, same with me. In hindsight, I know I wasn't stupid. I just had dyslexia. I couldn't learn. But I remember thinking, what am I going to do? Because anything I liked, like I remember one time, you know, I walked a neighbor's dog and they paid me for a week. And my mom was like, because they didn't know what I was going to do either. They're like, oh, my God, you could have a dog walking business. I was like, all right, everybody relax. I'm not having a dog walking business. I know you're all trying to help me. And then I did landscaping a little bit and I liked that. And my parents were like, you know, and I thought I really, here's how much I love doing landscaping. You know, like I love the concept of, you know, of the big boulders and the backhoe coming in and rearranging someone's. But I didn't like the heat. So I figured out that I was going to buy a truck and have an air conditioning unit put in the back of it. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I knew I couldn't run the air conditioning because you can't leave a car sitting. I would run like a window unit into the back of like a van that would plug into the home. And then I would have a side big glass window where I could look out at the site. And then I would sit in the air conditioning. I was like 17. This is what I was thinking. Yeah. And then I, you know, maybe that's why my memory of you back then was just such a, for me to this day, going into that club and walking in and seeing, you know, just seeing the performers and then they said there's an open mic night. I remember it like it was yesterday, like, hey, if you think you're funny, try your hand at comedy. And then I went and it was all just, oh my God, like, I think I can do this. Like, this could be something I could get into, you know? So.
Well, the same thing with me. I was trying to figure out life and not doing a good job of it. And I was sick all the time. And I thought, like, things are going to be bad, you know? And I didn't know what to do. And later in high school, not early, I wasn't, you know, like in 12th grade, senior in high school, the debate team teacher, the advisor of the debating team said, you know, you should audition for a play. And to me, that's a play. So I auditioned for the play and I knocked all the other actors. I got the lead in like every play, just like ding, 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 ding. Everyone, you know.
And you know who was in his acting class? Robert Duvall and Robert De Niro.
Exactly.
Is that true?
No. It's just he was doing the David Brooks thing from the debating team. No, nobody like that. But to me, getting those reactions of people after shows, it was really like I was – you know, people asking for my autograph on their you know, program and things like that. I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm a superstar. I'm going to be an actor or whatever. I was thinking kind of like, you mean I have some kind of talent at something? You know, that was really kind of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I just went to the arts. I just went to the arts. I just went to.
How long have you been married?
26 years. All in a row. The same. Not three different ones. Nope.
Hey, so here's what I'd like to do.
What?
Take a deep breath and go into the sunset, the end of the show. I'm going to ask you to pull your guitar out and watch your mouth. to do some guitar stuff. Do you mind?
Songs?
So what? Some.
I don't want to make you do. Okay, first of all, the one that I've been asked to ask you to do you did not do these on Chris's show.
I didn't do any music.
My manager says, I can't believe especially for the Nerdist, some haiku poems.
The surprise of it is actually when they're
Okay, you know what? Hold on. Let's we'll make a quick edit. So we'll do some stuff. Hold on, let's take a break. Hold on. All right, so you're going to pull your guitar out.
Yes, Daniel, I've been married for 26 years to the same woman. That's 87 normal people years because it's in L.A. Show business. My wife is amazing and fabulous, and I wrote this for her. Well, I wrote for you this song in haiku because I don't have that much time. And it's from the heart. It's from the heart.
Any
songs in haiku, easier to write, right to the point. One, it's strange that a dog will eat a dead bird, but will never eat a grape.
Give me
17 syllables. Count them, buddy.
You know there's
Danny
someone.
Danny Bonaducci probably wouldn't make a good babysitter.
Give me one more.
Life rushes on faster and faster, but the fact is you can't rush toast.
Look, Tom.
Yeah.
Are you putting your guitar down?
Oh, what am I supposed to do now?
Come on. You gotta. If you don't remember this, you just can't hate me for asking. I was 16. Just for the Philadelphia fans alone, you did. See how much your memory is.
I hope I got
a wife and kids and just. Do you remember that?
Got
a wife and kids.
For the Philadelphia.
Yeah, you
I didn't even. Got a wife and kids in Bryn Mawr Paul. We buy our alligator shirts at King of Prussia Mall. I haven't played that in, I don't know, 25, a long time.
We went to see you and you know, we didn't even know what song parodies were, you know, we didn't know that expression. And so this is the last one I'm going to ask you to do. I know you probably haven't done this in years, but it would make me so happy. A Runaround Sue. Could you do that? Are you going to get in the car and go, Todd?
No. Well, I honestly, how? What's the, how does it? How does
I haven't listen done, to like, a story 20, from? Listen, I know it.
Okay.
We have new reverb. Could I give you a little reverb? Would you mind?
Go ahead, if you like. Okay. I don't know. Go ahead.
Here we go.
Yeah, because Todd and I would be playing, certainly back then in comedy, and I did it for quite a long time. I mean, I sang the song for years because, man, it worked.
That's a great closer.
But you're doing, you know, you're doing a show at a bowling alley or something, and you just pick up the guitar and just use it. So it was a.
You would go. You know, Christ our Lord, and then you go.
Oh,
don't worry,
Catholic song. Oh yeah, Jews.
And then you would go.
I've got something for you. That's right. And I would have everybody go. Listen to a story from a goy who knows. You might see him in designer clothes. If they wear what they usually does, they're wearing beanies called yarmulkes. They got long gray beards and they wear black hats. Don't mess with these hip cats, cause if you do, then I'm telling you, you mess around with an Orthodox Jew. And I'm sorry, I didn't remember it.
You know what? That was better than I thought. Well, because I know you haven't done that, even though you did it for a long time. When's the last time you've done that song? 10 years, I bet.
Oh, at least 20 years. 20 years. Yeah.
Every time you'd play it, me and my friends, we'd get excited. We'd start nudging each other. Same thing. We'd get excited every time.
You do a Catholic song, you do a Jewish song, and everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy.
And the Protestants, I have no songs about mayonnaise, but I'm working on it.
That was great.
Tom Wilson, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Entertaining, enlightening.
Tom, would you do a, could you put up on there? We're ready. That one is here. We've been doing, you know that song, Welcome to My World by Elvis? Welcome to my world.
I don't.
I think you could do a good version. Give him a little reverb, and then we're going to use it in our opening.
I don't know.
Try it. We all give it a shot. Even everybody here has had to do it. I'm the worst.
I don't know this.
You don't know it? Can you put it up there?
Yeah. Can I hear it?
Yes. You want me to do it for you first? Welcome to my world. Here we go. Just be a good sport.
Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in?
I like it.
That's pretty good.
A miracle's again. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Keep that. Still happen on there. Oh, step into my heart. Leave your care behind. Welcome to my world. Sorry. Yes. See, can you find?
I love it. Oh, I liked it.
Thanks.
All right.
I'm learning how to do that one, too. All right, fade it out. Tom Wilson was our guest.
Would you like to plug anything coming up?
No.
I would.
Oh, go ahead.
You are going to have a new podcast on Nerdist.
I'm going to have Big Pop Fun, a podcast on the Nerdist Industries Network.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. What's the podcast going to be about?
It's going to be about...
Well, that sounds great. I just thought it'd be funny if I cut you off.
Don't cut me off, Kino.
You know, Kino?
It's going to be Big Pop Fun because most of the people that I know are actors, actresses, voiceover people, animation mm-hmm. people, directors, still photographers. And so most people are involved in popular culture. So mm-hmm. I'm big. It's pop. We're having fun. And it's me. It's talking to friends of mine and some monologue stuff. Just some me telling That's my great. Own stories.
And let me tell you something. If you... listen to the show once, you will fall in love with Tom Wilson. And so, you know, there's like these podcasts. You're like, oh, I listen to that podcast. I listen to that. You may maybe 5 months in, you'll be like, oh, I haven't listened to Tom Wilson podcast yet. I'm telling you, put it on your list. Listen to it. And then you will it'll be one of your favorite
your
podcasts.
Your life will be better.
It comes with my guarantee.
On the Nerdist. What will,
if you don't love the Big Pop Fun podcast with Tom Wilson.
What?
You have no taste in podcasts.
Now, let me ask you. It sounds like that's a lot of entertainment right there. How much is it? Is it $10 an episode?
Yeah, what does this cost, Tom?
How much is it going to cost $100? People to hear this all this fun with Tom Wilson? How much?
It's not $10.
No?
It's not $5.
Oh, so no, it's $5.
It's complimentary. Free.
Shut up.
Free.
Shut
the front door. Just,
I'm not okay for the Mick. I'm going to do it. I'll send you double. Double the
No.
You
can wait.
Two times.
We have to pay the delivery fee, right? I have to pay the delivery fee.
If you act now.
Half price
no
on the
delivery fee.
All right. Shut the front door.
All right, everybody. Free. I don't know why you're still listening.
I can't do it all night. Download it now. Three times. Free.
Okay, let's just cut to the bullshit right here. Where do they get you? Where do you get you? There's no way you download it. It's free. Oh, I figured it out. First week's free. What's it cost the second week? All right. You know how they do it. They got to No. All right, Tom Wilson.
Hello, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And,
how'd I do?
You did great.
Good.
You're great. You're a ball of fun.
Because my family, you're going, Dad, you're doing a podcast. What are you doing? And I have no idea. I don't know.
No, that's kind of how we run it here.
You know what I'd like to do? Get you in a cage. at my house, and then I'd let you out, and you'd do funny things for me. Would you do that?
Of course I would do that, Todd.
Come on.
Remember when we did that between 86 and 91?
When you guys
that was
did
so much
that
fun.
On the road?
You just slipped me a slab of beef through the bars, and I would go, Flaky, Todd, look at me. Oh, I'm doing a funny dance for Todd.
Oh,
a funny dance.
I thought you were going to be offended as it was coming out of my mouth. I got so nervous.
No.
Oh, it would be so much fun. You could do, like, songs and...
Get Alex Murray on the phone. I see a tour coming up.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I don't want it to end. We got everything.
We didn't even scratch the surface.
Well, we didn't.
No. I'm a guest host. Kino, you're out. Go.
All right.
Down the steps.
I'll see you guys later.
I remember I used to pick you up and take you to the one-nighters when you came back and you would do it, and I found out what you were making. Oh, again, when I saw checks, you did
I was making nothing, Todd.
Let me tell you something. It was at the Tap Room, and you had already moved out to California. Now you were coming back, and it wasn't a comedy club. It was just a one-nighter. They had comedy that night, Tuesday night.
The Tap Room, where was that?
It was in Ambler, Pennsylvania.
Ambler.
It used to be called something, and then it changed into the Cabarets, but you were at the Tap Room. And I happen to know, and I'm not even bullshitting, because they told me what you made for one night.
What was it?
You ready?
Yeah.
And I remember going, holy...
What year is this?
82, 83, 84,
maybe 84? 83, 84. 84.
And you are like, what, 25?
Yeah, 24.
$300.
For one night I made?
$350. That? I made $25. And I was like, because you know, Tom, I know that now that things, come on, maybe, really. Well, I saw three $100 bills and a $50.
Can you draw me a picture? Like, what did, like, translate that money? Translate that money in today. What did $300 buy you in 1985?
In America or Russia?
No, in America.
Look, time passes, Daniel.
Because are we talking
come on.
Small child on a car, or do we mean some groceries?
No,
Tom, I can answer better for you, and then we do have to wrap it up. It was just like when you're making $25 a set, to me what that represented, obviously because it was back then, or even just, not even back then, beginning days of comedy, that was like, that would, I don't know, I thought that money will get you, that's like, pocket money for the month.
But back then, see, I had come back because our good friend Andy Scarpati wanted me to do. Was he running that then? Because
no, that was somebody else.
Was it somebody else?
Yeah.
Because I wasn't, I was, you know, you're tired of back when I was a very young man and going around and driving to some gig in New Jersey and then a college gig in Ambler, so wherever, and you do three gigs a night. And then at the end, they give you a check for $5. You know, so
I do remember that too. I remember doing a free show, and then I went next door, and Andy Scarpati bought me a bagel, and I talked about that. I went, "Yeah, he like took care of my bagel." Was I mentally? Did I was deranged? Like, I remember like
took saying, care of my bagel.
Yeah,
that's a
like because to me that was like, "Oh, my comedy bought me a bagel. I'm doing all right." Anyway, I don't want everyone to start crying.
All right, let's end it on a sad note.
All right, we're done. Bye, Tom.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Listen to what's the show called again?
Big Pop Fun.
Big Pop Fun. I'm going to make you a few jingles and send them over to you.
I think you should.
All right. We'll be back.
We're not going to be back.
This is the show.
This is it.
This is it?
The show's over.
Yeah. It was awesome. You had a great time.
Yes. We had a great time. Yeah. I'm used to doing, we're doing another show, but it's for another week. People can know what we're doing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't hide anything from the
about
two shows.
I prepared a few songs that I've been working on.
Oh, pull
out. If we can end with that.
Yes. Sure. I love it.
It's like four songs. Okay. You know?
All right. Tom Wilson, thank you, everybody. Bye.
Thanks.
Have a good week, everybody.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.